found this on Ganarum. Ganamir ni.
What is it?
Well, it's, it's
super famous.
In my gravity boots, I'm stuck walking the hole with a pounding in my skull. Ain't nobody knows which way the solar wind blows better than a man being blown.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Guy Davis.
And we have guests...
And Andrew Pa-Race Dume.
May the Pa-Race be with you.
With you, yeah.
Oh, man. Like, news has been really weird this week in Star Trek. We've got great reviews for Star Trek Beyond pouring in. The movie's not even out yet. Now, those nice early bird reviews have been really positive overall.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going there... on Friday night.
I can't wait. I'm going Sunday, and then I might be going again earlier with Aaron, or later with Aaron, I don't know. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it in IMAX. I saw Into Darkness in IMAX, and it was amazing. Just the visual of it in 3D and everything. But also, they've announced Star Trek IV is for sure happening.
Yep. I'm looking forward to that, and it looks like they're going to be bringing back... Helmsworth.
Yeah, and the writers and the writers who wrote the original Star Trek Beyond script that got scrapped, which kind of has me nervous because everyone's raving about how good this one is, and Simon Pegg wrote it, so I'm kind of like, why don't you let Simon Pegg write the next one too, please?
Yeah.
And because, you know, Thor is coming back to Star Trek, you know, I'm assuming that they're just using that script that just didn't make it for this one. If J.J. Abrams is already making casting announcements, and you know, something's got to be written down somewhere.
Yeah. Well, and it's plausibly that we are, you know, they just wanted to send it back to be cooked a little longer.
Maybe. I wonder if they'll bring Shatner back because you know it sounds like time travel's involved with it somehow. If he's going to meet dear old daddy. The daddy he never knew.
There you go.
And I don't know if you've heard of this little thing called Pokemon Go. I know nothing about that.
Let me turn off my phone.
Like, it's a really weird, cheesy game that I like playing, but like it's making people get out and walk. And I was just thinking, like, what if you could do something like that with Star Trek?
I thought about that, too. The first thing I thought of was, wouldn't it be cool if you could make your own spaceships, like starships, and you could, like, walk along and your starship would be flying around in space and there'd be, like, you know, places to visit and things to do at those places where you could... Well, so I already thought this all out. I mean, because I was enjoying walking around with my buddies playing Pokemon Go.
The thing I thought about was that, you know, maybe they could use augmented reality to make your buildings look like futuristic buildings. So you're looking through your phone at, you know, a church or whatever, and it's like this big futuristic building or whatever, because churches are quite often, you know, landmarks and on Pokestops or whatever in the game.
Right.
And, you know, you got to have some augmented reality Klingons. And like, so basically, like, they could do a setup where Earth's being invaded, and you can either pick, you know, one of your several factions, you know, Romulans, Klingons, humans, or whatever. And you're basically just trying, it's more like Ingress, which was their previous game, where you're trying to, just like control the world or whatever. It just would be like, you know, with a lot more factions. Mm-hmm. You could do some really, really cool stuff with this type of technology and get people out and exploring and walking and hopefully not getting in accidents like they are with Pokemon, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but, well, if you're playing Pokemon Go, be sure to do what the screen says in the very beginning. Pay attention to your surroundings.
Don't climb off a fence off a cliff.
Yeah. Don't jump off a cliff looking for your Pikachu.
Don't ride a Segway looking at your phone next to a busy road. Don't do things like that. But
yeah, although was talking to somebody last night who was one of the Pokemon Go beta testers, and she was saying it really is just bringing out the same people that would have done that anyway. They would have just been texting at that time or something else.
Exactly. I mean, like, you know, you always, even out in the world, you always see people on their cell phones. It doesn't change. But now it's like, I bet they're playing Pokemon Go instead of, you know, texting, because Pokemon Go is such a huge thing. I think it's like, you know, taking over Twitter as far as, like, you know, active daily users. It's insane.
Yeah, it's already a second most popular app after Facebook, apparently.
It's incredible.
Now, which is great. I mean, like I said, I play it, and my wife started playing it yesterday, and so, you know, we now tootle around and go catch Pokemon in their neighborhood, and my son goes with us, and we have a lot of fun. And there's really nothing wrong with this, and I actually was just thinking about that. You know, you meet people, and they're like, have you caught a blah, blah, blah? And I've never actually engaged in Pokemon prior to Pokemon Go. I mean, as an anime fan, I was aware of Pokemon and everything, but it seemed the show, when I was really heavy into anime, was much more childish than I was interested in at the time. I was much more of the very large mech sort of, you know, anime and stuff like that. So I wasn't really into that. It wasn't anything wrong with it. I just wasn't that engaged. So I'm now having to learn about all of this stuff. I mean, I knew Pikachu and Team Rocket and stuff like that, but it was very basic. So I'm on the upward swing of learning all of these things now.
And the nice thing is they're doing it slow. It's just Gen 1 Pokemon right now. Not even all the Gen 1s are in there, like the Legendaries. We're still waiting on those to jump into the game. So yes, we're a whole bunch of nerds over here at Synthaholics. But, you know,
we're your nerds.
Yes, we're your nerds.
That's just the way it goes. There's room in us for
speak just for yourself here. Speak for yourself.
Oh well, you're occasionally
fair enough. I'm right there with you guys. Okay.
But this is great implications for other games. I'd be awesome. I'd really love to see a Star Trek game follow this type of model. It'd be kind of fun if they do it well. But you know how I was saying, you know, Pokemon stops a lot of times at churches? Tonight we're talking Star Trek and religion.
That's right.
Religion and Star Trek. So there we go. So Andrew actually proposed this topic to me.
I did. The main reason I did it is because of the very reason Star Trek, one of the main facets of Star Trek is this, you know, unshakable belief in logic, reason, science, fact over superstition, faith, and just, you know, blind following, incredulity, you know. But if that's the case, if we're supposed to be living in this utopia where everybody's, you know, has reason and logic and everything's science-based, why is religion still here? Why is religion still in the Star Trek universe? And I know for a fact that you can look at the Star Trek universe and say, well, it reflects our own reality, and therefore religion's still in our own reality, so it's making a commentary on that. Fair enough. But let's look at it from an actual universe. If this was so prevalent, if science, religion, logic was so prevalent, why is religion still on Earth? And religion was still on Earth. When you watch the opening episode of Enterprise, Phlox talks about going to a high mass at the Vatican and going to a Buddhist temple in Tibet. Why? And on top of that, if, you know, they're supposed to be so more advanced as most of these other races, they come here and they're still taking interest in our religion and in our culture. In addition to that, Star Trek is a very humanist, and I use the term loosely, it's humanist in the fact that it's humanity-based or humanoid-based, if you will. And a lot of times you'll see humanists arguing about how horrible religion is and all this other stuff and how horrible, how it's bad for society and how it's bad for civilization. But as humans, you cannot take religion and separate it from humanity. It's not going to happen. It's always going to be there in one form or another. So I guess really I just want to get to the core of why Roddenberry kept it in there and why the mythology of Star Trek kept it in there when they could have easily written it out.
Well, I thought you said you wanted to do this because you thought I wouldn't like it.
I never said that.
Yes, you did.
Oh, I didn't think. I didn't think you guys would be into it. Yeah.
What do you want to talk about? And you're like, you're not going to like it. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm not going to like it? He's like, I want to talk about religion. I'm like, that'd be fantastic. I think it'd be great because it shows up so much in Star Trek. And looking at the, you know, religion Wikipedia on Memory Alpha, like, there's a lot more links. And I was just like, I was blown away by the amount of links. I didn't even get a chance to look at them all. I mean, this could theoretically be a multi-part series, you know, eventually, you know, do part two a year down the line, part three another year. There's just so much. And I'm sure we'll see new facets of that with the new series, probably.
Well, and Roddenberry himself was a very active atheist. He was a secular humanist, which is somebody who believes that you don't need to be religious in order to have morality.
But I thought he was—I thought he was more agnostic, though. Like he was like, you know.
No, he once said, "quote I condemn false prophets. I condemn the effort to take away the power of rational decision, to drain people of their free will." And a hell of a lot of money in the bargain. Religions vary in their degree of idiocy, but I reject them all. For most people, religion is nothing more than a substitute for a malfunctioning brain. That's a pretty direct statement.
Yeah, but he changed a little bit in his ways, you know, as he went on, because I think he kind of went back and forth between...
Of course he did. Well, I mean, he was a human, just like all of us. I mean, everybody... You know, everybody, you know, goes in different directions. You don't, you know, that's one of my aggravations about discussing politics. Since we are discussing religion, is that, you know, everybody has changed their mind and changed their pattern on things. But he did specifically set up Star Trek with a number of times the script, the God thing, kept coming up over and over and over again. And Bob Justman and Dorothy Fontana kept pushing it back and pushing it away because they were afraid that the South would just turn off their TVs and never, ever, ever show Star Trek ever again if that ever showed up, because it effectively was the plot of Star Trek V, you know, which was discovering God and then finding out that God was just an alien that wants to take everybody's money.
Starships.
Or starships. You know, yeah. And stuff like that.
But he wasn't really God. He just fooled one Vulcan into thinking he was God somehow, even though...
Well, he tried to fool all of them into thinking he was God.
Well, yeah, but he only really succeeded at fooling the Vulcan.
Right.
And the Vulcan succeeded at fooling lots of other people.
Right, but because... that's sort of the point that was trying to be made, which was, you know, what if that's what's happening with all of our religions? You know, and so...
But Roddenberry was super against Star Trek V. He was super against pretty much all of them, except for the motion picture, because he actually had
his hand. It's because he wasn't involved in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's... I don't know. You were talking about this, and, I mean, it's like, obviously, in Star Trek, there was a wedding chapel, but it was... You know, we saw it in Balance of Terror.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, it wasn't necessarily a Christian wedding. I mean, like, you know, captains, you know...
Captains do that, right?
Captains, you know, perform marriages. I mean, pirates, I mean, they probably weren't Christian.
But I believe,
and they were just like, yeah, I can marry people because I'm a captain of a ship. That gives me the right.
Right.
By law. And this, we're talking about religion here, so.
Well, and in the episode That Which Survives, Lieutenant Radha is wearing a bendy, which is a traditional Hindu symbol on her forehead. I mean, you know.
And I think Keiko, when she and Miles were going to get married.
Couldn't decide which way to go.
No, they couldn't decide whether they wanted a priest or a minister, I think.
Well, she was marrying in the traditional Japanese wedding ceremony.
Yes, that's right. Maybe I'm thinking of Worf and Jadzia.
Yeah, because they...
Jadzia,
yeah. Yeah, he wanted a traditional Klingon wedding, and she was like, let's just, you know, go to Ryza. One of those Horgon women will probably marry us. It'll be cool.
It'll be awesome. Nobody will ever notice.
It'll probably also be an orgy somehow by accident, but you know.
Yeah, but yeah, the Keiko wanted a traditional Buddhist ceremony, or rather Shinto ceremony, which is the traditional Japanese ceremony. But Japan has a very unique and interesting way about dealing with religion also, because they have a lot of shrines and things like that, but they treat themselves as a secular nation. However, they all do all of the religious operations, but then swear up and down that has nothing to do with religion. Like, you know, certain times of the year, they'll all make pilgrimages to the shrines and, you know, put money in the little bins in front and clap their hands and bow and do all of those things, which is a very religious procedure, but they swear that they're not religious at all. So there's a lot of interesting, I feel like, parallels to that in Star Trek, where we have, they're going through the motions, but they're not, they're just doing it because it's part of
they're
the culture.
They're respecting tradition.
Right. They're respecting their traditions,
especially,
and it's part
if you
of
listen
the culture.
To Worf say anything. Worf is all like, oh, tradition, like a broken record.
Exactly. And so it's kind of, I've thought a lot about religion in Star Trek, obviously, because it is, the humans are very set up in Star Trek to be very secular.
They are, but that's kind of Gene Roddenberry's personification of himself upon the humans in Star Trek.
Yeah.
And I mean, like you know, you mentioned Andrew, the, you know, flocks visiting those temples and stuff like that. But that's like that's also pre Federation and pre, you know, United Federation of Planets, and, you know, barely, you know, they've barely got Starfleet going on. And it's almost sort of amazing that many religions survived at all after the Third World War, in Star Trek history. I mean, because I mean, like, you know, like. 60-70% of the world was wiped out.
Yeah. For those of you playing at home, Dr. Phlox makes that announcement in the episode Cold Front, and he talks about going to a Tibetan monastery and going to see Mass in St. Peter's Square. So I'm just saying that for people who are bingoing at home.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, in Star Trek, probably the biggest places you see religion are with the Klingons and with the Bajorans, especially the Bajorans, because I mean, literally, like, half of Deep Space Nine is about
the Bajorans religion.
And, you know, their religion and how it works and how it affects politics, and it's really scary how it affects politics and their
it does. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the statement they're making. We also have Chakotay, who spends an awful lot of time
with
religious.
With his fake Indian religion that was made up for the show.
It was made up totally for the show.
So bad. Like, you know, at least they could have tried to reflect actual, you know, Indian religion, but then they just made up a bunch of hokey pokey stuff for the show. And, like, when I first watched Voyager, I thought he did that way more than he actually did, because, like, I just remember being so annoyed by his weird fake religion.
Every time.
Yeah, every time. And then, like, when I rewatched Voyager, I'm like, I thought he did this way more often. Like, I guess it just annoyed me so much when I was a kid that, you know, it just, I felt like he did it every single time he was in the
episode. Right. It's true. It's true.
It just, I mean, if it was more real and, like, less fake, I mean, it might have been interesting. But so, especially since he was human, I mean, it makes sense that Bajorans, you know, have a fake religion, since Bajorans don't actually exist that we know of.
Yeah, and I think part of the statement might have been that everything evolves. I mean, if you look at Christianity today, and Christianity just 100 years ago, it's a very different thing than our nation.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't even recognize it, and even if you did grow up in it or if you didn't grow up in it, it didn't matter. I mean, this is a completely different world.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, they were so hard on Chakotay being, like, so, and all of Chakotay's Indian people being so into their roots and, like, you know, walking around naked and doing, you know, whatever that Indians do.
Yeah, I mean, we see those parallels today with people saying they want to go to their roots too. And when they talk about roots, they're not talking about the actual operations that occurred. I mean, in the 1700s, we were, you know, killing and burning witches. And that's not the roots they're talking about. You know, they're talking about different roots. So clearly,
how do you know she's a witch?
Yeah,
if she weighs the same as a duck,
clearly they're picking and choosing their roots,
yeah.
Which that happens with all the religions.
Yeah, and see, that's one of the things. I mean, maybe this is because of my own personal kind of feeling about religion is, yeah, they are picking and choosing their roots, just like with the Bajorans. You know, look at how the Bajorans' religions affect politics. Yeah, it does affect politics, but they were also oppressed people, and that religion kept them together, their quote-unquote roots. So it's almost like...
I'd like to see the Bajoran text that talked about suicide bombing and all that sort of stuff. That'd be fun.
Well, you did have, I mean, effectively, you would have to call Kira a terrorist.
She is.
Yeah.
Just like a lot of them. I mean, there were a lot of them who were upright, straight-up terrorists.
One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, I mean, you know, Christianity held a lot of people together through some really nasty times, too. And that's, so, I mean, it's not like it, you know, that was one of the core survival of a lot of people through the early first millennia, you know? And especially when it got oppressed and got pressed down and they got put into slaves and used as slaves and things like that. So
yeah. I mean, they're very analogous.
Parallel was direct.
Yeah, they're very analogous to like the Hebrews.
Right, exactly. It was a direct parallel. And that's what made it fascinating. But it also gave it that kind of edgy, scary feeling to it, because you could see that we had done something similar, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And the thing about the Bajorans, too, it's kind of like, it's kind of weird. It's like, I mean, like, they refuse to believe that the prophets are wormhole aliens, that clearly everyone else can see it, but, like, I feel like Bajorans are just so, like, new to aliens at all, they can't even wrap their head around, like, you know, their gods also being aliens.
But that can't be the case, because they were able to travel to Cardassian space in that solar sail thing that Sisko and Jake
maybe they only knew the Cardassians. Maybe they were the only, like, neighbors they saw, because it just feels like they're very untechnologically advanced people. Like, even, like, season 7, they've got, like 30-year-old Bajoran fighters or whatever that they were trying to, you know, hold a line, you know, Kira was bluffing, you know.
Well, there's also very strong evidence that the Greeks and the Romans understood that the world was round. They were accurate within about a couple of thousand feet of the size of the Earth. They knew that we were not the center of the solar system, and that they knew that we were orbiting a star and that there were other stars in space. And all of that information got lost because we had a number of really nasty wars. We lost the Library of Alexandria in a fire when they burned it to the ground because of religious persecution. I mean, there's a number of things that make it believable that plausibly over a long period of time, Bajor lost their understanding of aliens. And
that's actually really interesting to think about. But I mean, like, even you know, losing that, I mean, the prophets aren't your everyday aliens. They exist in at least the fourth or fifth dimension.
Yeah.
Because of the way they perceive time and the way
that would make sense that they would look like gods of some sort.
Oh, because, anything that's outside of our, you know, dimension would be godlike to anyone. I mean, because we can't perceive. I mean, we understand the fourth dimension is time, and we're stuck moving from one moment to the next moment to the next, and we can't go back. But, you know, fourth dimensional beings, or fifth dimensional beings, and, you know, anything higher than fourth dimension can move through time like we move through space, which is, like, hurts the head to think about.
Yeah.
Which is why they're always referring to, you know, Sisko as the linear.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think all of this is definitely they're trying to draw an analogy. Because I think secular humanism is a hard concept for people to wrap their head around. You know, the idea that you can be a moral individual, upstanding individual, without the need of a religious structure. And it's because our religions historically have held us all together in really tough times when we needed to be morally right and people were being morally wrong, and our religion held us together. So if you're not part of the religion, you kind of make that that alignment that it's sort of, you must not be moral if you're not part of the religion. And that's a mistake that a lot of people make. And I think that it's hard to wrap your brain around that because the two have been so intertwined in our history for so many years.
See, the weird thing about it, though, is that people have a hard time. How can they be moral without being, you know, religious? And I understand where you're coming from. But at the same time, like every religion, don't steal, don't kill, treat each other like you would like treat each other, like you need to be treated. I mean, those are like the three basic things about every religion out there. You know,
yep.
Don't be nice to each other. You know, we're all in this together. And it's almost like religion, as much as religion is supposed to define our morals, it's more like secularism defined our morals and religion took it and expanded on them to the point of ad nauseum.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'd be willing to buy that, you know, the religion is just an extension of that. But I also feel like that we've had a lot of time where those two got tangled up.
Yeah, for sure. I would agree there.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that I think Star Trek gives a little bit of permission to people who have felt that way for a long time. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, they're sort of expanding upon that and saying, hey, we're, you know, these characters are either various religions or not religious at all, but all of them are good people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that message because it says that you can be whatever religion you want and it's okay.
But okay, you could be any religion you want, and that's okay. But in actuality, you're an idiot because you believe in this religion.
Yeah, I don't know if Star Trek necessarily plays that off that way.
I don't think that was
the way that I know that's the way that Roddenberry felt.
Yeah,
but I think the rest of his staff really mitigated that.
And you know, in Next Generation, even the episode you wanted to talk about tonight that we're not, you know, spending the entire episode talking about.
Rightful heir.
I mean, like, Picard, like, flips out at Worf for, like, abandoning his post, but then Worf explains it to him. Picard doesn't talk down to him. Picard's like, well, look, you haven't taken shore leave. Go take shore leave. Like, figure this stuff out. And this is important to you. Go do it. Like, Picard, we don't get a lot about, like, what he, you know, his belief system was. But, I mean, he didn't look down on religion because he didn't scoff at Worf for, you know, wanting to go do this. The only reason he was upset at him was because he missed his duty. And, you know, And, you know, it's fine. I mean, you can be upset with somebody whenever they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing because that's, you know, that's, but I mean, at the same time, he wasn't looking down at him. And, you know, Benjamin Sisko is probably the most religious human in all of Star Trek. Granted, he's all about the Bajoran religion, but.
Well, he converted, too. That's an interesting dynamic on the characters that Benjamin Sisko converted.
He was basically agnostic and then converted to Bajoranism.
He came over at, you know, he came over as time went on, which I found intriguing.
But he's also half god, so he's just kind of believing in himself.
Is he really an atheist, or
I don't know, because he's believing in himself, or he's a humanist, he believes in himself because he is half. He's a Siskoist. No, but like it's probably one of my favorite episodes of Deep Space Time. It's up there. I can't remember the name of the episode, but the episode where the Pah Wraith takes over Jake, and then one of the prophets takes over Kira.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Sisko's like, I know the station could blow up, but I know the prophets are with me. I'm their emissary. You know, Jake's my son. They know that. They won't let anything bad happen to him. And he shows this remarkable amount of faith. And there's a way they can flush both of them off the, you know, the station because they're not really gods. They're aliens. And you can mess their physiology by whatever means necessary, you know, whatever the means they figure out for the show. But his belief is so strong, he's willing to sacrifice himself, his son, and the station because he believes nothing bad will happen to his son. And then Kai Wen, the religious leader, doesn't have that faith, and she goes and activates that machine that will push them off the station, preserving her life. Like, right. It's just insane, like, how much faith he shows in that episode, and how it's outshines people who were born into that culture.
Right, right. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on in that particular episode.
There is. Obviously. It's a beautiful It's a beautiful episode. It's probably one of the best, you know, representations of any faith ever presented in Star Trek.
And he does handle it very well. I mean, I agree with you. He handles their religion very well. But in the very beginning, we had a lot of Dax-Sisko interaction where Dax was saying, learn to be more tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, I don't know, it's...
Let me pose a question to you guys. Okay, so, you know, we're talking about religion, and I think a lot of times religion and faith get mixed up together, which obviously they were going to, but they're actually, in my opinion, they're definitely two different things.
Sure.
They're two different, separate things. So would you think that Star Trek, the entire mythos, would you have to say that they're pro-faith, anti-religion? Anti-religion, anti-faith, anti-faith, pro-religion. I mean, what's your definition of faith and religion? And then you would answer those questions about Star Trek. I mean,
would you like me to take that real quick?
You can start with yours, and I'll go with mine. Okay. I mean, I think he's asking us individually, so go ahead.
Yeah, I am.
So I'll take this one. I personally believe that they're gentle to both faith and religion as far as the show goes. So, but I don't think they're pro either. I think that they are. The way that I feel is always that our heroes look at faith as, well, we used to do that too, but we don't anymore. And that's the way I sort of feel that it comes across in a lot of ways, especially in the Next Gen era. You know, because they were a lot lighter on people they were a lot more integration in the TOS era than it was now in the Next Gen era. So that's my feeling, is that I think that they don't endorse either. I think that the heroes sort of see it as a, okay, well, that's cute. And, you know, it's kind of like I wear white after Labor Day. You know, it's kind of like, okay, you can do that. You know, sort of.
But at the same time, doesn't that create kind of an exclusiveness for the Federation? It's almost like they're, you know, people who have religion, these aliens of religions, are like the new white man's burden type deal. Oh, we're going to let you do that because, you know, you guys just aren't as advanced as we are. So we're going to tolerate it and, you know, we're going to continue doing what's right and what's real and while you live in your fantasy land.
That
is a valid point. I'm sorry, David. I keep stepping on you.
That's right.
That's a valid point. Except that, you know, the problem with faith, and this is one of the problems that Roddenberry did have, and he said it numerous times, is what's right for one isn't always right for all. Some have similar alignments, but as we're discovering even today. You know, there are certain things that are absolutely wrong for one religion that ends up hurting people because of that belief system. And you know, so if you were to acknowledge and say, yes, it is totally right to religiously hate, you know, Andorians, let's say, because your religion says that Andorians are all bad, then you pretty much then have to say, we're going to go kill Andorians now for you. Or you can say, well, yeah, I see where you're coming from, but we're not endorsing that. And so it's kind of one of those, where do you draw the line on it? And you could take it as being, like, arrogant and an arrogance. And I think we see that in today's culture as well. You know, as a certain amount of arrogance that these people are looking at our religious beliefs and saying, hey, that's not an appropriate thing. We don't like it. We think we're better than that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in Star Trek, that wasn't necessarily an elitist function so much as a, we understand that that's where you are. We're not there. So you can continue going your way, and we'll operate in a different way.
Kind of like a Prime Directive type viewpoint of it.
Well, right. We've got kind of a Prime Directive viewpoint of your religion. And because, I mean, every time Sisko, like the episode where Sisko was trying to find Bahala, and he couldn't, he was obsessed with it, trying to find Bahala. And when he did, you know, during that entire thing, we've got this whole, Ben, are you going to get back to work? Because, you know, you're running a space station, dude. Sort of communication going in. And there was a lot of, we really want to let you do your religious-y thing, but can you do your job, too? Sort of communication.
God drunk, you know?
Yeah.
He's totally oblivious to what's going on, yeah.
Right. I don't know. That's my feeling on that one.
Well, my take on it is that I feel like the Federation is indifferent or tolerant of religion. But the thing is, I mean, we see, like, Star Trek is, I mean, it's granted, it's 700-something episodes and now 13 movies. But, I mean, we're only seeing a tiny, like, sliver of the Federation. Like, we don't know what people on Earth do. We don't even know what people on Earth do who aren't part of the Federation. Like, we don't know what their pop culture is like. We don't know what, like, anything. We don't know what their religious life is like. The only thing we know is what we see the Federation officers do. And maybe Starfleet Academy, you know, teaches them just to be tolerant. Or maybe, I mean, everyone's, because it's the Federation, it's a perfect utopia world, but maybe they're more indifferent to it in the Federation and in Starfleet. To other aliens, and then the way they treat faith is, I mean, I think they embrace it, but not necessarily like religious faith. But there's always faith put in something because they always have to put their faith in something, either themselves or their crew, or, you know, Sisko is the only person who really has like faith, who's a main character. Well, Worf has faith, but he's confused most of the time.
Yeah,
my own personal opinion, but one of the reasons I brought it up was I think Star Trek is very pro faith, and to go back to what Dave said is that there has to be faith in something. There has to be faith in, you know, your crew. There has to be faith in your captain. There has to be faith in your ideology. There
faith
has to be
the, faith in the Prime Directive. I mean, but
faith in the Prime.
But religion, what? They're just indifferent to it, or they're not they don't ever bash religion in Star Trek outright.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on the faith function. I think that I've even said that Trekkies have a certain amount of faith as people, because we have faith that 300 years from now we'll get over all of our petty bickering. And we'll be in the stars doing spaceshipy things, mm-hmm. even if it's not literally that there will be a Kirk and a Spock and a McCoy, because we know that. I mean, that's obvious. That's not going to happen. But to some degree, I think that we have, as Trekkies, sort of a faith in the future.
I think we want to have faith in the future. I think our current political landscape is making us all despair and want to cry.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even then, I think that all of us are still looking to, oh, well, we just have to endure another 50 years of this, and then we'll get over it. You know what I mean? We'll figure out whatever was our problem that makes us do all of this crappy stuff, and we'll get over it, and we'll move forward. And I think that that's something I have seen in a lot of Trekkies that is interesting, is that they have a faith. And the faith is that we won't always be stuck here, because Star Trek sort of does that.
They kind of have a faith in the human spirit. Like, it's going to conquer the human pettiness, you know?
Right. And we We prove it all the time by connecting with people in Japan and connecting with people in Russia and connecting with people all over the world who are obviously in these war-torn, horrible cultures, and yet we all get together and say, yeah, just like that episode, you know, That Which Survives, or just like in Who Mourns for Adonais. And, you know, we all of a sudden, once once we get into Trek mode, we're all connected. We're all buddies. It's all, it doesn't matter where you're from or what religion you belonged to or what anything. So I think that that's why I think we get our faith reinforced because of that, because we've met people all over the world who are Trekkies, and we know that people are people, and we get, you know, and so all we have to do is just get over whatever is our, you know, our little petty differences with one another.
I mean, Trekkies, too, is a huge, great example of exactly what you're talking about. These people from war-torn places are just like, you know, Star Trek gives me hope that the future will be better. Like, it's just, I mean, it gives me shivers, and it just, it's amazing that that could be kind of, you know, so powerful to people. I mean, I think to us in America, I think only the more diehard kind of think of it the way we're talking about it, because we're spoiled by our not war-torn, I mean, we're at war all the time, but I mean, like, we don't see it here except on television. So we don't feel the same way other people do, unless we're the hardcore Trekkies who, like, really have this faith that we will be better one day. But just to see these people in other countries who, like, it gives them hope. It's heartwarming and amazing. And also, I think at the beginning of Trekkies 2, there's, like, a Catholic priest who's, like, dressed up as a Starfleet captain, and he invites people from a convention to Mass or whatever, which was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that religion can live just fine. I think, like anything, people are susceptible to power, and religion can be powerful. And so I think that religion by itself doesn't go bad. I think power-hungry people take over religion, and then it goes bad. And I think that what Star Trek tries to portray is that we've gotten over that. Now religion just hangs out like a good friend in the other room. You know, it hangs out kind of like Buddhism does now in today's world, where people are Buddhist, but you don't see anybody pushing an agenda. We don't have a Buddhist agenda going one way or whatever. We don't see Buddhist bombers blowing themselves up. We don't see any of these people utilizing their religion in that specific way to push an agenda, a political agenda, which is what's happening with a lot of our Judeo-Christian religions.
Unfortunately, very unfortunately.
It's a horribly unfortunate thing, because the religions are actually fascinating and full of real rich history. And even for people who aren't interested in those religions, interested in being part of that religion,
there's still tons of history there.
There's so much that's fascinating and wonderful about those religions, and these people keep perverting it and using it. And none of them are exempt. I mean, there really were. The Jews had the Sicarii, which were terrorists, effectively. Buddhists have been extremists in their time. Shinto have been extremists. It's just that today's day and age, they just don't happen to have the extremists right now. But that doesn't mean that there weren't.
I mean, there's always been extremists in, like, the Christian religion. Like, I don't know if you guys heard Hardcore History, the podcast Hardcore History. But if any of you have not heard of this podcast, I encourage you to check it out.
I
specifically want you to listen to the episode Prophets of Doom, which is, like, an amazing episode about these people around the same time as Martin Luther and the printing press. So this is, like, the first time, like, the Bible's been massively printed, and these Anabaptists, like, go nuts and, like, just get everyone killed in this one little town because, like, they predict the end times, and it's just like, oh my god, it's utterly insane. It's like a 3 or 4 hour long, deep in-depth history lesson on this Anabaptist period, and I highly encourage you to check it out. It is probably my favorite episode of that podcast.
I actually wrote a paper on that in college, and it's a very interesting subject. I definitely go check it out. It's weird. It is a weird situation.
It's very weird, and that's what makes it so fascinating, because it's so bizarre.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if this episode isn't like the typical humor episode, but I mean,
But no, this is a fascinating topic to me, and it's a really fascinating and deep topic to me, because I'm not religiously aligned, and a lot of it comes from the fact that I feel strongly that Star Trek gave me permission to decide that I could be not religiously aligned, and it still would be okay. And so this is a very close topic to me for that very reason. I mean, I feel like, because I, you know, my family is Southern Baptist, and it's, you know, that was a lot of the way that my family, you know, and even now there's a little bit of ostracism because I'm not aligned. I don't go to church. I don't, you know, I didn't baptize my child, you know, this kind of stuff. It makes them uncomfortable, and it's an uncomfortable thing, but it's very important to me because the discomfort doesn't seem to be with the fact that I have chosen not to do the precepts of the religion. It's that they're afraid that I don't have a moral compass. And that worries me.
That's bizarre that with that religion, there's a perception of no moral compass. Because, I mean, like, if that was true, I mean, wouldn't there be way more serial killers?
Yeah.
Way more serial killers.
A lot more, like, people who were dead or died. I don't know. And I mean, like, I think,
cause, I mean,
was it Penn Jillette that said that, you know, if you think you need a god to prevent you from doing horrible things, that says more about you as a person than it does the people who don't have a moral or who aren't religious. And I feel like that's true. I mean, that's kind of a terrifying thing, that there are people who feel like, you know, if you don't have somebody watching you 24/7, you're going to suddenly do something horrible. And it's like, wow, that says a lot about your character, you know, as a human, by making that statement.
Well, I mean, that's also a huge thing. I mean, like, you know, even if you don't have, you know, moral compass, I mean, Star Trek doesn't endorse any particular faith, but no. Everyone is, especially the Federation, are generally very moral. And very good, you know, they try to be very good people. And it's you know, I mean, if anything, I mean, Star Trek could even be a good, you know, way to base your morality around, more or less. I mean, it's...
Sure.
People trying to be their best.
Well, that's, that, you know, my mother, who was a very wise woman, too bad she doesn't listen to the podcast because she's no longer with us, but my mother once said, she had a saying she said all of the time to me, which was, remember that most of the people, most of the time, are doing the very best that they can. And I've taken that to heart because I think a lot of times when we see people doing bad things in the world, they're either misguided or they misunderstood the situation, or, you know, you very rarely find somebody who's like, you know what, I'm going to go do something horrible today. You always find that there was a mitigating circumstance in some way. They had a psychotic break. They were pushed so far that their brain literally just snapped and they perceived the world wrong. You know, all kinds of stuff like that. You very rarely find somebody who's like, I have decided, you know, you very find Timothy, the serial killers, the Dahmers, things like that. You very rarely find those people in the everyday world.
Normal, perfect lives. I mean, I listened to another podcast called Last Podcast on the Left, and they talk about serial killers quite often. And it's very consistent that serial killers have, like, really bad parents, really bad, you know, growing up environments, and probably had some kind of, you know, head trauma as a child.
Right.
It happens so often, like, that trio of things. Head trauma, bad parents, like, crappy childhood.
Yeah. Which, then you look at it and you're like, well, if we could have solved any one of those three things, you could have solved that serial killer and stopped it right there. And yet we perceive that, you know, everybody, the first thing, you know, somebody does something horrible, and our go-to response is, well, they're just a jerk, they're evil, they're bad, they're horrible people. And that was something that my mother was like, I don't think that's accurate. I think that's just, I think we're not perceiving, you know,
all this goes, all that does is create an us versus them. If you can create them evil, it takes the human right out of them. They're just a monster then. And when you make them into a monster, they're easier to hate and they're easier to punish.
And that's what we did with the Japanese and the Germans.
Yep.
Yep.
I mean, we did that straight up, the propaganda that we did in World War II. And, you know, I lived 3 years in Japan teaching English. And, you know, I think the thing that was so interesting was what I really learned was that my teenagers, because I was in junior high, my teenagers had major, major Japanese problems, like their boyfriends and girlfriends breaking up with them, which actress on TV was the cutest, and what music that they were listening to this week. And, you know, it was like after a year of that, I'm like, these guys aren't that different at all. And then after 2 years, I was like, these guys are exactly the same. The only difference is they speak Japanese and not English. You know, that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, my kids were my kids, and I loved all 457 of them. And at the end of that, I really didn't want to leave because they were just good folks that just needed to, you know, grow up and go through junior high and make it to high school, get a job and get a life like everybody else. And that was a very eye-opening experience for me because we are indoctrinated from an early age that, you know, everybody is different and we're the only ones that are normal. And back to what I was saying earlier, Trekkies, we realize quickly that it doesn't matter. The political lines mean nothing. The religious lines mean nothing. We're all Star Trek fans at heart, and we're all together. Boy, I'm sounding preachy, speaking of religion. I'm sounding all preachy over here.
Guy, I want to go back to your previous point about the being ostracized to a certain extent because people feel like your family might not feel like you have a moral compass. And I can relate to that to a certain extent because grew up in a very religious household, not a very religious person at all. And as much as it's not, I think they know that I have to a certain extent a moral compass, although it's a little bent at times, but
doesn't always point to true north.
True north, yeah.
Your iPhone's near a magnet; it's just spinning around. It's like a helicopter.
But one of the things, like they don't. It's not what bothers them. I mean, it's not even like they think I'm going to burn in hell. I mean, they don't know. That's God's decision, you know. In their eyes, I think it's almost like they're afraid of me losing that part of our culture because I'm Catholic and Catholicism, I think it's a little different than Protestantism.
It's
just because
it's very different.
It's very different.
I'm Protestant.
Well, it's in the fact that it's a cult. It's not just, oh, I'm going to decide to be Catholic today. And then I'm going to decide to be Protestant or I'm going to decide to be Hindu. It's like, once you're Catholic, you're always Catholic. That is your culture now, and you can see that in you can see that in Ireland. You can see that in Italy. It's just
and Boston.
I think in Boston, yes. But it's almost like it's not about you know. Oh, you don't have a moral compass. Oh, you're not going to hell. It's almost like this religion's carrying who we are, our history as a people. And when you deny it, you deny us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot. So just to be clear here, we've got a Protestant and a Catholic on this podcast, right? So,
yeah.
Like, we have, like, the Irish war going right here. Like, right here.
Panama, Panama!
Yeah. My family's Baptist, so we were, like, sitting there going, dude, I don't know what's wrong with you guys. You know, yeah. We're just going to stand over here.
You're sitting on the sidelines. Pick a side, guy.
Andrew, actually, I think that you hit on it really well right there because actually now I'm thinking about it. You're right. It's more about denying your culture because then I think, you know, a lot of this is about what is your family's culture? Do we pray before we eat? And when we do, what prayer do we say? How do we say it? You know, what foods do we eat? What foods are correct? I mean, you know, like their pork is off and on. Different religions don't like pork and different religions don't like beef. And, you know, you get like all of this stuff where you might be presented with a meal that doesn't have food that you're supposed to eat. And I think you're right. I think it's about the culture. And I think that's one of the things that we're all talking about all the way across the board here, because like I said, as a Trekkie, we now have our own culture, sort of. You know what I mean?
In a way, yeah.
Because you think about it, as soon as you do the Vulcan salute, we're all like, okay, yeah, I know who you are. You know who I am. Totally, we're all good.
Yeah.
We're all in the same culture. It doesn't matter what religion we are. It doesn't matter what color we are. It doesn't matter what part of the world we came from. We've agreed on a set of rules, so to speak. And I think that that's where the fear comes from. You're probably right. I think that that's where the fear comes from is the, do you know the rules? If you're not my religion, are you following the correct rules? You know,
and there's that in the Star Trek thing too. Because I mean, we talk about this all the time on the show. Where like, there's all this division in Star Trek, and it's like,
yeah,
the people that
exactly.
say the people that say, you know, oh, you know, the JJ versus, if you like that, you're not a real Trekkie. And I'm just like, that's do you hear yourself talking? Do you have any idea what Gene Roddenberry's like vision of Star Trek was, and infinite diversity, infinite combinations? Like, do you hear yourself? You're ostracizing people who are Star Trek fans because you feel like they're not Star Trek fans because you dislike something. That'd be like me saying, like, if you like Star Trek V, you're not a Trekkie. I mean, that's utterly ridiculous.
Somebody had said that on a Facebook page, and I retaliated, and I said, well, I have a lot of faith in Simon Pegg because he's an old-school Trekkie like I am. And the guy responded and said, well, now your Trekkiness is in question. And I'm like, really? Really? You know, because I'm like,
Do you do a Star Trek podcast? Do you do a Star Trek comic?
Yeah, I know. It's like, I draw a Star Trek comic and have for 10 years. I've done a podcast.
I
was beaten up on the playground for carrying a cardboard phaser around. I mean, aspect of Trekkie am I not example?
Yeah, exactly. I made Star Trek home movies with my VHS camcorder live, mixed with live action and action figures. Live action and action figures. That's how crappy my Star Trek fan movies was as a kid.
Where does our badge of Trekkiness come in? When do we earn our badge of Trekkie? I mean, you know,
if you like one episode of Star Trek, you're a Trekkie. If you like one movie, you're a Trekkie.
As far as I'm concerned, yeah, that's the way I look at it.
Like, that's where I am.
And don't Trek shame. Like, no, you know, instead of slut shaming, don't Trek shame. Like, if they like JJ movies. And if you're upset, they like if you're one of those JJ haters, you're upset that you're upset that someone doesn't like it. Explain to them that, hey, look, there's all this other Star Trek. Please watch this. You might like it. Show them some of your favorite episodes. Don't be like, oh, you're stupid. That's not Gene Roddenberry's vision. That's not being kind. That's not being excellent to each other like Picard would be to somebody, or like Data would be to somebody.
You know, you see the parallels.
It's crazy that, you know, the religion, you know, we're talking about religion, now we're talking about Star Trek as a religion, you know.
In a way.
I think I'm going to put the Church of Star Trek joke from Futurama on the cover for this one.
The Star Trek Wars.
You should. Of Star Trek. Yeah.
Yeah, from Futurama.
But I mean, the truth of the matter is what Andrew was saying is absolutely spot on. It's not really that religion is a thing. You divorce religion from its cultural operation, and you end up with the same thing as Trekkies, or geeks in a larger fashion, brown coats, or Star Wars fans. You end up with this – you have a group that says, you and I were safe together because we know – all the same rules.
Or the Pokemon Go people that just you meet on the street. It's like, oh, we've got this in common. It's so bizarre. It's like, I would never have ever talked to these people ever before in my life. But
here
we're sitting here
with complete strangers. Or kids.
Sitting in a graveyard.
Like,
and
yeah, there's like 20 years younger than me kids that I'm sitting here chatting with. You know, because they're in their late teens, early 20s, or mid-20s, where normally I wouldn't have any reason to talk to these kids. And here I am chatting with them about catching a Pikachu down the street, you know? And that if they go down the street now, they might be able to catch him. And, you know, it's all about finding that connection. in our, I guess, like our little cave group. I guess we must be, this must be like a descendants from caveman. You know, anybody who's in my cave is safe. If you're in another cave, I have to throw a spear at you.
Yeah, it's just so crazy. And it's just different things bring people together. And, like, I like how Pokemon Go brings people together. And I think it would be great if Star Trek brought people together in the same way that Pokemon Go did. Segueing back to our beginning of the show. Like, I just think that would be amazing. Bring people together.
It would. Although, I hate to say this, but I think there's something somewhat magical about Pokemon Go that they've caught lightning in a bottle. And I'm in fear that it won't work because Ingress has been out there for a long time doing the exact same thing. And though there are some very devout Ingress players out there, they haven't gotten the ground
Ingress,
in as fast.
Ingress is its own IP. Pokemon has been around for
I think over
a decade. Star Trek has been around for 5 decades. I think Star Trek.
Yeah, and if you look at Pokemon Go, I mean, that's like you get 28-year-olds that are playing it because that's what they played when they were little kids.
Yeah, that's
all the nostalgia. It's a nostalgia factor right there.
Yeah,
I agree. That's where I think Guy's right. It's lightning in a bottle. They just right time, right place, right idea, and it's just.
Well, Star Trek would be the same thing. People have been watching Star Trek for 50 years. I mean, granted, Star Trek probably doesn't have the mass appeal as Pokemon because Pokemon is good for all ages, and it's Star Trek's good for all ages.
Star Trek. I started watching Star Trek when I was 8 years old. I never stopped.
I started watching Star Trek when I was an infant and never stopped. But I'm not saying it's bad for all ages. I just think.
Yeah, I know.
I'm more of a Trekkie than you both, because I've been watching it since 75.
See? Now we're doing it.
Impossible!
You're not a real Trekkie. You're not following my rules.
No, you're not a real Trekkie.
My religion here, people.
but what I'm saying is, like, Star Trek is somehow more niche, somehow, even though it's been around for a lot longer.
It's been in a decline since its heyday, and that's what I'm hoping for with CBS, the CBS TV series, and frankly with the JJ, with the Kelvin universe, the Kelvin timeline, is that it's going to resurge. It's going to come back, and that's what I'm really hoping for. Because yeah, it's not Kirk and Spock and McCoy on cardboard sets and sparkly dirt sound stages, but it's still, the heart is still there. And that's the important thing that I think we're all looking at, which is, what is the heart of Star Trek? And where is the heart of Star Trek? And, you know, when you look at these stories and you look at what brings us together, it's the same sort of the precipice of this concept of a positive future and all of us being, you know, together in this same culture, even though we're all from different backgrounds and from different environments, and even in Star Trek, obviously, different worlds, all banding together to do the best that we can with the universe. And I think that that's sort of what brings us all together on this. And that's sort of maybe the base of that religion that we're talking about, which isn't really a religion. It's just a grouping of us, however you want to call it.
Yeah.
Again, this is Reverend Guy speaking again.
you should get your online reverency and just make it official.
Okay, would it be creepy if I said that I already have that?
No.
So there's a story. There's always a story. My best friend wanted to get married, but he didn't want to have a. He's also secular, and he didn't want to. He didn't want to have a preacher because it didn't fit. It didn't seem to him. It felt like it was insulting to the religion since he's not part of the religion, right?
It's like giving a lip service, yeah.
Right. It totally felt like it was inappropriate. So instead, he had me go get an online reverency, and I officiated the wedding. So I really am Reverend Guy. It's just one of those weird, creepy, who knew?
I think that's great. I think it's hilarious.
It's totally bizarre.
I think it's cool.
We'll have to do
Who knew, right? Podcast. Now I'm going to be talking.
We'll have to do a podcast wedding one night.
I need to do the speaking, though, where you do the thing where you go, and now we will read from the book of that which survives. If everybody will please turn to the, you know.
Turn to the Star Trek Beyond script, page 76.
And Scotty said, there is not enough power, Captain. And Riker said, or Picard said, make it so.
Yes.
Yes.
And then Kirk said, Scotty doesn't believe in gods. And also, man has no need for gods.
And Worf said, you are not Kalos. I put you in your place, son.
You are not Feklar. But,
you are not Feklar.
I hate to do this to you, but I gotta go. People are falling asleep, and my boisterous laughter is keeping them up. So I gotta get going.
Oh,
but,
right.
That's all right.
I mean, this is an interesting topic. And guys, if you want to hear more of this, please email us. If you hated this and don't want us to ever talk about religion again, also email us. We may or may not listen to you, but let us know what you think. Thanks you for joining us, Andrew.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was great being here, and you know, whenever you want me back, let me know.
Oh, will do. Hopefully soon.
All right.
All right.
Guy, it was nice talking to you. Have a good one.
It was awesome talking to you too, Andrew. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We have an email from Isaac Law. He said he emailed it to me, but we were just talking on Facebook. He's like, I'll just send you the, you know, a text document. So, from Isaac, he said, it's a shame my parents weren't geeks, because if they were, they would have told me Star Trek can be found on CBS as a kid. No matter, because I would definitely become a generic science fiction fan because of films and shows like Iron Giant or Ben 10. Now, all I want to do... Iron Giant?
I love it. I've actually
never seen it.
You got to go see it. It's a beautiful piece of animation.
My dad said it was like okay. He said it was like a good like Jesus kind of parallel type thing.
I could see that.
Let's see. Now all I want to do is create my own alien races and populate my own sci-fi universe. I was well within my teens before watching Star Trek, which I suppose is just the right age. And while my knowledge isn't perfect, I can remember which episodes from the series I liked. Star Trek Voyager Distant Origin, with those Volth who are sentient dinosaurs from Earth, is what I keep watching over and over again. We actually had a ton of fun talking about that episode. Everyone did the dinosaur. That was a lot of fun doing that one. And I said, as far as for the Star Trek reboot, I love it, but I hate haters, and I don't know J.J. Abrams well enough to actually hate him. It's all simply turned out to be a miracle in disguise, and Star Trek Beyond apparently has 50 new alien races, which remind me of Rick Baker when he worked in Men in Black. I adore that.
Yeah, I agree.
People are going to hate me for saying this, but in the new upcoming series, is anything like the reboot trilogy, and has precisely that kind of dedication to creating aliens, then I'll definitely think it'll be better than the other series. As for the previous timeline, I wish species like Antikins and Saley were more common. Those guys have hated each other, and I love how they were more alien and less human. And one more thing, I do a webcomic called His Seven Valkyries, and the 2017 series is awesome. I hope it is. I'll probably write fan fiction with my characters crossing over Star Trek characters. Yeah, I'm feeling optimistic right now, but oh god, it's through being my own captain. So, thanks for writing us.
Yeah!
It's great to have a you know, great to hear from people and see what they think and, you know, about Star Trek and everything. Distant Origin is a fantastic episode. I hate on Voyager a lot, but Distant Origin is an amazing, amazing episode. I love it. I love how it's like also a Galileo parallel.
You hate on Voyager a lot, but I have recently rather enjoyed going back to Voyager. I hated Voyager a lot during its run. But I have come around and have decided that the book of Voyager is awesome.
Well, like it's funny as I go back and rewatch it. Like it's just there's some episodes that I absolutely love. But the thing that that Voyager that bothers me is that like it never really hits a stride like TNG does or you know DS9 does. Where like the first three seasons are crap and then the last four seasons are awesome. Like Voyager has a mix of great and terrible episodes almost
all the way through it.
Almost in equal parts all the way through it. So it never like got measurably better. It stayed.
I don't know. Like you know, Janeway, her hair unfurled. I still think that made it measurably better at that point.
I think it got a little bit measurably better when Seven joined, which is season four. But I could be partial to Seven, but a lot of episodes came as, you know, Seven and Doctor episodes, and those are probably my favorite two characters. So they did get better, but then when they started doing other characters, those were probably the not as good episodes to me. But I hope whether the series is in the old timeline or the new timeline, I hope they do a lot of aliens. I mean, that's the one thing that kind of like that. Hopefully, it'll let them do. But I mean, TV budgets are TV budgets, so I mean, I personally wouldn't mind sacrificing a couple aliens for some really nice space battles or some, you know, nice special effects or some beautiful sets. And the first season will probably not feature as many aliens, just because a lot of the money is going to building the sets for the first time. You know, the costumes and all that stuff. So I would imagine if you're going to see a whole bunch of new aliens, it would probably not be till season two, because then you know your sets are built, and now you can, you know, start throwing money at other stuff.
Well, I don't know. I think that modern technology is going to help a lot there, because we'll have more like the Species 8472. Which, you know, was completely CG, and I think we're going to end up with more like that, because it's actually cheaper to generate those. So we might end up with things like Species 8472 wandering in the background, or manning a science station, or something like that, because they just need to, as long as they're on screen,
fill spaces.
Yeah.
Like,
then it might show much more diversity. I
hope they do that, because I really love like the bridge of the new Enterprise. I mean, you've got your main stations, your main people, Uhura, you know, Spock, Chekhov,
yeah.
You know, Sulu, and you've got, but then there's like six other people on the bridge. In the original series, you might have one other person on the bridge, maybe two other people on the bridge, maybe Skadi will come up, and in next gen you had like, you know, maybe one, two people at the science stations in the back. But then in the movie they had those side stations and all this other stuff. Like, I really hope they do stuff like that. Like, I hope the bridge is like big.
Yeah, I could see that. The problem is the on-screen non-speaking. I don't know. There has always been a SAG-AFTRA rule when on movies and TV where you get paid a certain rate, and you know, if you're an extra, sometimes you don't even get paid at all. But the rate changes dramatically the moment you say something, and I have often felt that was extraordinarily conspicuous, because you always had two people talking and everybody else just nods a lot and hands them pens.
Yeah.
You know, it always looked stupid. And I always felt like that was just like the dumbest thing. So I always hope that, you know, this year will be the year that people will be like, we don't have to worry about on-screen non-speaking anymore. And so everybody can talk if they want to.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. I always hope, and you know, so I'm kind of hoping that the new rules with streaming are going to allow us to have less of the obnoxious handing a pen things, which drives me absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. You know what? I forgot to ask Kipley last time we recorded with her. Seth MacFarlane was in that episode with her.
Yeah, he was. Beginning. That's right.
And he had speaking lines, too. I'm like, oh, I wonder if she got to meet him and talk to him. Because apparently, I mean, he, beyond Family Guy, he's a huge Star Trek fan.
Of course he is. There is like a weird exception to it. Like, if you do a walk-on cameo, you can say things, but, you know, you don't have to worry about being paid more than scale. Or something really weird. I don't understand it all. Maybe if you're listening to this podcast and you know this information, why don't you email us?
Alex@yahoo.com.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, totally, we'd love to understand if there is an exception. Because I have noticed that when people do cameos, they seem to have lines. But if they're just extras, they don't seem to have any lines, even if the lines are, you know, shields are up, Captain, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, that's their only line, you know.
Well, Seth MacFarlane, if you're hearing this episode somehow...
Somehow. Contact us.
Email us. Come on the show. We'd love to talk to you. We love... I mean, I love all your Star Trek stuff that comes up in Family Guy. I love when the entire cast came on.
Yeah.
I actually want to do an episode of Synthaholics on that episode of Family Guy because it had all the guys in there at some point. So I think that'd be kind of fun as an off episode one day.
Yeah. That'd be fun. That would be fun.
And how Denise Crosby got like one line and got killed. poor Denise.
I know. But it's a statement, and the statement was true.
Yeah.
And you can't knock that. I mean, because it totally...
It was beautiful. It was beautiful, and I love that episode. And so, yeah, Seth, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on. Let us know if you got to talk with Kipley and hang out with her on the set of Enterprise. Well, since you were
she's pretty cool. That episode. We like her.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's nippy.
She's a royalty from what we hear.
Yes. We just accept this royalty thing.
It's just, yeah.
We know who's in charge. Kipley's in charge.
It's the ongoing thing. Well, I'm sure next time we have her on, we'll be talking, you know, introducing her as that again. So,
yep.
It's all
as Royal Highness Kipley.
Her Majesty.
Her Majesty Kipley.
So, Kipley, if you're listening, I hope you enjoy this, Your Majesty, and that we haven't misspoke.
Right. Right, I hope you please don't kill us.
Please don't send your Borg Queen of M&Ms with alien blood after us.
The Borgified M&Ms. Borgified green M&Ms.
Oh, we love you.
I think we've exhausted all of this, haven't we? We've pretty much run it off down the ground.
We're just like, you know, bringing the jokes back. It's just, you know, it's just, it was a very heady episode, so we're just kind of like...
And we have to do something silly. We can't possibly just let it end here.
We can't just be serious the entire hour and a half or whatever it is.
That's ridiculous. So, Who wants to do that?
This is not the Synthaholic way. And for those of you playing at home, I finished the entire bottle of wine. I didn't tell you. I told Guy before we started recording that I was drinking wine tonight instead of whiskey because of the religion and Star Trek talk. I had a Moscato from California. And I finished the whole bottle. I don't feel slightly buzzed, so I'm kind of disappointed.
Aww.
Let's see. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com and Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us online at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. If you're on Twitter, we're at synthaholicduo. Me personally, I'm at David_J_Duncan. Aaron O'Brien is at Blackbird2004. Faith Hertzberg is at Faith Hertzberg. Where can we find you, Guy?
You can find me at USS Tamerlan on Twitter, and you can find a USS Tamerlan on Facebook as well. And soon you'll be able to find me at Witches of Flame.
Witches of Flame.
Witches of Flame.
I cannot wait.
I'm building it now. It's so fun.
Alt history is very cool.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it. I'm so excited.
It's going to be great. You guys should check it out. Check out his Tamerlan comic, which is also amazing. Which is kind of how we got introduced to Guy on the show.
Yes.
If you heard that episode way back when. From
way back when.
Earlier this year, late last year. Mm-hmm. Whenever that was. So, if you want to support the show, please give us some stars on iTunes and some written reviews. We will read these on the air if you would like. So we can just, you know, thank you for giving us stars. If you want to give us more than stars and throw money our way, we do have Patreons for our prospective work. We've got the Synthaholics Patreon, which is a Patreon/Synthaholics, and Guy's work on Tamerlan and Witches of Flame for Patreon.com/GSDavisArt. So if you want to support us in that way, we'd absolutely adore it. It helps keep the show running. It helps keep this comic running. And it's great, and we love your support.
We do.
Do you have anything else, Guy?
No, I think that's about it.
Peace and long life. Amen. To all of you out there.
May the Church of Star Trek and whatever church you go to be with you.
Yes.
Live long and prosper. Have a good night. Good day. Whenever you listen to us. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
I was trolling earlier.
Today?
No, last week. I didn't mean to, but I said, you know, who said the trivia question was, who said that logic is the cement of our civilization?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I saw that. Yeah.
And then everybody was like, you know, they answered properly. That was the computer on Star Trek IV. But then I said, well, where was the callback? And they were like, I said, what other character said it? It's because it's Siren from the Vulcan Forge episodes. He asks the same two questions in the same order of Archer.
Nice. Because
he was like, you know, Captain Archer, you're a person who studies Vulcan history. So who said logic was the cement of our civilization? To which all of it, and he's like, I don't know. You tell me. And he's like, you know, he's like all of these things. It was really funny. But apparently Kirk Thatcher wrote all those questions too.
Oh, nice.
Huh.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And then,
so what's the news?
And then the next question that Siren asks is, what is Kiri Kinthaw's first law of metaphysics? And Archer responds by going, I know what Newton's first law of thermodynamics is. And I guess it's very similar.
Go, Archer.
Yeah, I know. Archer's like totally trolling him. It's just beautiful.
Nice. All right.
You know what? The Enterprise started to really grow on me. And I'm bummed that it's going
on. Yeah.
I love it. The
first episode or the first season was but then that second season, third season were pretty good. They're disappointing.
Yeah. Fourth season was where it really got awesome because clearly they got some. Manny Cota was obviously a major fan since he borrowed the questions direct from Star Trek IV.
We actually kind of have a lot of news this week, and I have a weird segue to get into religion and Star Trek.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah. From news, which it'll be a seemingly non-related piece of news.
Gotcha.
And then I'll try to segue from that to the actual topic, if I can remember, 5 minutes from now.